If you put a $500,000 down on Bitcoin to buy your $500,000 house, 5 years later, at a 60% CAGR, your $500,000 of Bitcoin is now worth $5 million. There is no price that can convince you to sell. Bitcoin is engineered money. Bitcoin is strategically designed to preserve value and grow value through time. And that's what Michael Saylor has figured out. But what the copycats are missing is, so that's why I hold my MicroStrategy shares and have no plans to sell my MicroStrategy shares really ever, because I do believe Michael will successfully make MicroStrategy a central bank of the internet economy. Donald Trump is the tariff king, but what if you paid tariffs in Bitcoin and you got a discount? And then the United States could add that Bitcoin to its reserve by offering discounted tariffs through Bitcoin. In the fine print of that centralized entity, there is some type of rehypothecation scheme going on. The big players, they'll use their printed fiat debt as a way to accumulate your Bitcoin. So liquidation risk is the largest risk as we move into financialization, because...
What's up, y'all? I've realized over 50,000 of you guys keep coming back and listening to every single episode. And while I'm eternally grateful that you guys keep coming and listening to every episode, I've realized that over 79% of you guys are not subscribed. So I've got one small ask for you guys. If you can hit that subscribe button and that like button wherever you're tuning in, it'll help catch the algorithm and help orange pill the masses. Now, I'm eternally grateful for you guys to keep following along and listening in. So thank you guys all so much for joining in on this journey. Now, let's get into another great episode. Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I've got the man, the myth, the legend, recurring guest, Big Feta, also known as CJK to those in the Bitcoin space. But CJ, a lot of time has passed since last time I had you on, and I've heard some rumblings that you're talking about Bitcoin as the best collateral there is. We've heard Michael Saylor say that. I've heard you say that. So tell me, do you think there's ever going to be a reason to sell your Bitcoin?
Well, thank you so much for having me back, Brandon. It's great to be here. It has been way too long, but boy, do we have some news for you today. And I got to say, Michael Saylor is spot on. Everything Michael does is spot on. That's why he's leading one of the most profitable Bitcoin treasury companies in the world. He has opened the Pandora's box of financial engineering. Even what we do here at People's Reserve is building on top of his shoulders. He's done financial engineering for corporations and institutions to get exposure to Bitcoin. And we focused on financial engineering for the everyday Bitcoiner, for retail, who can be empowered to never sell their Bitcoin. If there's one lesson I've learned, don't sell your Bitcoin, especially at the bottom of the S curve. So for all the Bitcoin circular economy guys out there, I agree with you. I don't disagree with you. I just disagree with you right now. When we get to the top of the S curve and we've had global adoption and Bitcoin has transformed from a store of value to a medium of exchange and a unit of account, yeah, go ahead and spend your Bitcoin, because the purchasing power of Bitcoin will most likely be tied to the growth or contraction of the global economy, because everything will be priced in sats. But we're nowhere near that right now. We're only in year 16. We're at the bottom of the S curve. We're in the middle of the largest transfer of wealth in human history. And you do not want to sell the asset that all the wealth is transferring into before that transfer is complete. So what we need right now, the tools we need right now, are not really about the monetization of Bitcoin as digital gold, but the financialization of Bitcoin as pristine collateral. And that's what we focus on here at People's Reserve, creating the financial tools you need to unlock the purchasing power of your Bitcoin without giving up ownership.
Yeah, so there's been this movement, it seems like, to basically, you know, use Bitcoin-backed loans in all of these different avenues, right? We've had Strike, you guys, obviously. How do you think that's just changing businesses in general? And then, you know, from a business to like a personal balance sheet, how does that all change everything? Because, you know, before it was like, all right, you know what, if I want to buy a house, I got to sell my Bitcoin and then go to the bank and get a loan. But all of these things have essentially been transforming how people are now interacting in this new financial world. So how do you see it revolutionizing everything and Bitcoin as we know it?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great question, because this is not the first iteration of Bitcoin lending, right? So in the previous cycle, we had the fiat iteration of Bitcoin lending, we had Bitcoin lending with rehypothecation schemes going on in the background. And what we learned is when you rehypothecate Bitcoin, because you can't print more of it, because you can't expand the supply just because something's too big to fail, it actually fails. So we get the healthy part of the credit destruction cycle. So in TradFi, we don't get the destructive part of the credit cycle. So what do we end up with? Zombie companies that can barely service their debt and a too big to fail system where if there's ever a mistake made, nobody ever has to pay the penalty. And what do? We just print over it. Well, you can print fiat dollars and cash equivalents all day, but you can't print Bitcoin. So when these rehypothecation schemes went wrong in Bitcoin, everything collapsed. And unfortunately, those people who were harmed, especially in the FTX scenario, this is what's going to happen with rehypothecation schemes, even moving into the future. I think for Bitcoiners, liquidation risk is the largest risk as we move into financialization, because the big players, they'll use their printed fiat debt as a way to accumulate your Bitcoin. So we have to be careful of that. We have to be cognizant of the fact that big players want to accumulate Bitcoin. And one of the best ways for them to accumulate Bitcoin is to issue debt and get that Bitcoin at liquidation prices. And then if something goes wrong and in the fine print of that centralized entity, there is some type of rehypothecation scheme going on. When they print the money, they can only print dollars. So they're going to settle with you in dollars. If for people who were involved at FTX, you know, some of them said, oh man, well, you know, some of the news came out after everything got shut down and they closed withdrawals and things started to be revealed. By the time things started being revealed that a lot of the coins were just misappropriated in different areas than when they were supposed to be, but a lot of those coins were actually recovered. But the people that were harmed, they did not receive back their Bitcoin. So Bitcoin dropped down to $16,000 through all this liquidation process and everything broke down and the company was closed. But then a month or two later, Bitcoin was back up to like $30,000, $40,000. So people were thinking, man, this is a good thing, because if I could just get back some of my Bitcoin, then I'm going to be sitting pretty. I won't have lost everything. I'm going to get back my Bitcoin. But unfortunately, they did not receive back their Bitcoin. They received back the dollar value of their Bitcoin at the time of liquidation. So this is why at People's Reserve, we say choose your counterparty wisely. This is V2. For financialization of Bitcoin. And we do a couple things different at People's Reserve. Obviously, we don't rehypothecate, but we just don't say that. In the fine print of our contracts, which everybody will be able to read later this summer, we actually contractually obligate ourselves to not rehypothecate collateral. So if we were to rehypothecate the collateral, we would actually be in breach of contract. That is a new standard in the industry. Most of the industry says that, well, maybe there could be some rehypothecation. We don't really know. And that's pretty much because of the way their infrastructure is set up. They're borrowing from a credit line and they're paying for that credit line. And then they're arbitraging the difference in their borrow rate to the rate that they can lend you the money. At People's Reserve, we've taken a different approach and our cost of capital is zero. We ourselves act as an LP and we've sourced other LPs who believe that lending to an entity with a printer is actually more risky than lending to an entity that is secured by Bitcoin and real estate. And something else that pushes us into V2 of financialization of Bitcoin at People's Reserve is we don't treat it like a risk on tech stock that you borrow in margin. So when it comes to our Bitcoin powered mortgage product, you're not just posting Bitcoin collateral on margin and then borrowing with like a 50 to 70% LTV. To initiate the purchase of the home, you only need to post 1-to-1. So if you want to buy $1 million home, you post $1 million of Bitcoin. Well, how do we do that? Well, because number one, it's a cross-collateralization contract. For the lender, it's not just the Bitcoin that secures the loan. It's also the title to the real estate that secures the loan. So we can reduce that threshold. Number two, we mitigate liquidation risk. Many a time, and I know you have some stories too, we've had some sleepless nights putting Bitcoin on leverage and borrowing against it on margin. Well, I don't want my customers to buy their home and then not be able to sleep at night. So what we want to do is mitigate that liquidation risk. And how we mitigate that liquidation risk is number one, adjustable interest rates. So if you post 1-to-1, $1 million, you buy the $1 million home, and then the price of Bitcoin goes down, people are like, well, wait a second, won't I immediately get liquidated? No, because in our contracts, and this is part of the real innovation, like it's a contract, right? Everything's a contract in the world of business, whether it's a smart contract or a centralized written and signed contract where you look in the eyes and shake a hand, everything's a contract. And our innovation is within our contract. And what we do is, as the price of Bitcoin goes down, every 10% the price of Bitcoin goes down, 50 basis points gets added to your interest rate. So if we have a COVID type crisis and Bitcoin is at $10,000 and the price comes down to $5,000, in other platforms, the industry standard, you would be getting margin calls. And then as the price went below $3,500, you would be getting liquidated. So what's the difference between that scenario and the same scenario at People's Reserve? Well, you post that $1 million at 10,000, we have this COVID type liquidity crisis, the price comes down 50%, your interest rate goes up 50 basis points for every 10%. So 2.5% overall. So let's say you're borrowing at 6.5%, then your interest rate can go up to 9%. But as Bitcoin recovers and a month later, right? A month later after COVID, could you imagine you're borrowing it? It goes down to 3,500. You're liquidated. A month later, it's back up at 10 grand. You're like, oh my, I don't even have my Bitcoin anymore. This is the worst case scenario. Well, at People's Reserve, you would still have your Bitcoin. The only difference is for a month or two, you would have made a little bit higher of a monthly mortgage payment. But as Bitcoin went back up in price, because it works to the upside too, every 10% increase in Bitcoin, you get 20 basis points docked off of your interest rate. So that 50% gain in Bitcoin price actually equates to minus 1% from your borrow rate. And before you know it, going through a liquidity event, it's not about losing your Bitcoin and having to start over with your savings. It's just you pay a little bit of a higher mortgage payment that month. And then when the price recovers, you're right back to where you started. But the really exciting thing is as you move into the future, remember, Bitcoin is engineered money. It's strategically designed to be savings technology. So as it appreciates in value over time, it's going to strengthen your loan to value ratio. And for every 10% Bitcoin appreciates against your loan value, you're going to get a lower interest rate. So it could be that year after year, or even month after month, or quarter after quarter, however Bitcoin performs, your mortgage payment actually goes down. And that's why People's Reserve is here, to empower responsible savers of Bitcoin. We want to make sure you sleep well at night with no liquidation risk, that the burden of the collateral that is provided is at a 1-to-1 ratio instead of 50 to 70% of the value. And then, of course, with price volatility, removing liquidation risk and then empowering you in the long run to make sure that as Bitcoin's growth outpaces the growth of your debt, the burden of that debt for you and your balance sheet shrinks over time. So I couldn't be more excited, because we had V1 of financialization. It failed miserably because it was very fiat minded. But the transition into V2 isn't just about innovation. It's about the Bitcoin mindset. And at People's Reserve, we are relationship maximalists. We're not profit maximalists. We believe you actually make more profit by developing lifelong relationships with your customers and treating loyal customers like royalty, rather than chasing out new customers and trying to bring new customers in so your lifetime customer profit ratios can start to go up. All of these fiat metrics, all of these fiat measurements from CPI to business, they don't mean anything on a Bitcoin standard. What means something is, Brendan, your kids and my kids will do business together. Why? Because People's Reserve is a one-stop shop for life, Bitcoin, and real estate, your most important assets. And we're going to treat you, a loyal customer, the way you deserve to be treated, like royalty. And that relationship will generate more profit over the lifetime of our relationship than just trying to squeeze out a couple extra percentage points and extract value. Forget about extracting value. People's Reserve here is to deliver value, because we have a Bitcoin mindset. And they always say, you can't change Bitcoin, Bitcoin changes you. Well, business can't change Bitcoin, and Bitcoin changes business. And we're happy to be the first iteration and the first market mover to embrace this philosophy.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, you guys are disrupting a major market in the real estate market. I'm trying to look it up here as we were going through, and it's estimated, I believe, at $390 trillion at the end of 2023. And now obviously Bitcoin's just a $2.5 trillion market cap at this time. How quickly do you think that Bitcoin is going to take over the financialization of not only real estate, but, you know, we've got gold a little bit under there, and we've got all these other major assets that have just been big players, right? You mentioned earlier, we're 16 years into this thing. It seems like things are going to start going quickly, and, you know, Bitcoin's already dipping its toe into the bond market, and you're going to help dip it into the real estate market. So how quickly do you see this thing starting to take over?
Yeah, there's no doubt we're seeing acceleration. I mean, Bitcoin users are growing faster than the internet grew. So we're talking about exponential growth. Look how fast we've come from the year 2000 Y2K up to 2025, right? In 2025, like everything is on the internet. Like if you don't have your business on the internet, you're falling behind. And in the future, if you don't have your money on the internet, you're going to fall behind. So the rate and pace of adoption is staggering. And I think we're going to continue to see acceleration, especially with the advent of companies like People's Reserve. And although Bitcoin is only a $2 trillion asset class right now, I think the first stop is single family home value. And then once people realize, wait a second, I work my whole life. I work my whole career to pay off my home. Now I'm going to have to work even harder just to get one Bitcoin. There's going to be a real wake up moment when Bitcoin exceeds the price of the average single family home here in the United States of America. And I don't think we're that far away from it. And then, of course, the next stop after that is gold parity, which is a 10x from here. That's $1 million Bitcoin. And already Bitcoin is unaffordable for most of the world. First world country people still have a chance to get a couple. But very soon, even first world citizens are going to have a hard time accumulating one Bitcoin. But that's just the $2 trillion market. What about the multi-hundred trillion dollar market? I'm not a big fan of Janet Yellen, but she did have at least one good quote. And that was that the most important source of wealth for Americans is in their home equity. Because we removed gold from backing the dollar in 71, the financialization of the real estate asset class monetized real estate. And the financialization of that asset class drove significant monetary premiums into the asset class. And as people wake up to this fact, we'll see that premium drain into a great form of collateral real estate is, but it's not pristine collateral. It's not 24/7, 365 liquid, right? I could sell my Bitcoin collateral today in just a couple of minutes, and I can have transaction finality within 10 minutes. It's going to take a couple of days just to get my house listed. It's going to take a couple months to get my house sold in a strong market. When you have interest rates the way they are now, people have been trying to sell their house for a couple of years. So it's an illiquid asset right now with rates so high, which makes it a bad collateral, or at least definitely not a pristine collateral. And as that premium drains at People's Reserve, it's not just about empowering Bitcoiners to purchase their dream home, to unlock the purchasing power of their Bitcoin without giving up ownership, and to not make the mistake that I made of spending the Bitcoin, borrow against it, do what the uber wealthy do, do what Elon Musk did with his Tesla shares when he bought X. He borrowed against his Tesla shares. He didn't give up ownership of Tesla. He bought X and then he used the cash flow from X to close the liability. At the end of it, he still owns his Tesla shares and he owns X. So this is what the uber wealthy do. They borrow against their assets. There's no taxable event. And you use the cash flows to close the liability. In the end, you end up with the best of both worlds. So that's fantastic for Bitcoiners. But what about all of the people that live in the United States who actually bought a home and now the vast majority of their home, like Janet Yellen said, the value in their home is actually their most important source of wealth. And now you're watching the value of that home crash against Bitcoin, right? Like when my neighbors met on July 4th, they're like, CJ, you got to be happy, huh? The house is doing so good. I'm like, let me tell you a story. You might have used dollars to buy your house, but I had to sell something way more important to buy my house. You know, my house today, if I could sell my house and get the same amount of Bitcoin that I bought it for, I'd be getting $10 million for my house. And their faces are just like, I'm like, yeah, my house is not even worth near anywhere $1 million. So although the dollar value has gone up and you guys want to celebrate with a beer and a hot dog, that's kind of fitting because I would like to have some filet and maybe a glass of Captain, but the beer and the hot dog are fitting for the dollar valuation metrics that you're making because it doesn't make sense. Bitcoin is crashing the values of real estate. And what does that mean for people who own their home? It means that there's a very small window of opportunity for you to transform your most important source of wealth, as Janet Yellen says, transform that home equity into Bitcoin equity. And that's what our home equity Bitcoin line of credit is about. It's coming from the opposite side. These aren't Bitcoiners who need to unlock Bitcoin purchasing power and want to buy their home. These are homeowners who have home equity and understand that that home equity is crashing against Bitcoin, and they better transform that equity into Bitcoin equity real quick. Real estate equity grows at 2 to 8% CAGR, or compounding annual growth rate, depending on your zip code. Bitcoin's 10-year CAGR is over 80%. Its 5-year CAGR is over 60%. If you want to get ahead, you must transform your home equity into Bitcoin equity. And you better do it sooner rather than later, because Bitcoin's appreciation is not going to stop. There's no supply expansion of Bitcoin. The transfer of wealth from the printed fiat world into the absolute digitally scarce economy cannot allow for a loss of value transfer, right? Energy, it's Michael Saylor's thermodynamics. Energy cannot be created nor destroyed. Since that wealth was created, when it's transferred, none of it's destroyed. And when it's transferred into an absolutely digital scarce asset, the value of that asset is going to go up significantly. That's what makes Bitcoin engineered. That's what makes Bitcoin a pristine collateral. It appreciates over time, over the life of the loan, reducing the burden of the debt versus a cash equivalent or a treasury debt note. It loses value over the life of the loan. It gets continuously diluted because of what of the requirement of the government to run deficit budgets. So a collateral that loses value over the life of the loan is nowhere near as good or pristine as a collateral that gains value over the life of the loan. So it's important for people to realize this. And I think personally, the next big wave of purchases will come from home equity. Right now, we're seeing that big wave coming from Bitcoin treasury companies. They have access to U.S. capital markets, especially people like Michael Saylor with his genius and the financial engineering that he's doing, creating different financial products that give exposure to Bitcoin, including products that include cash flow plus Bitcoin exposure, raising that capital from the market and getting it into Bitcoin. Well, what comes next? What's the big next wave of purchasing power? Where's this big next buyer come from? Well, when Bitcoin gets to that single family home value and the light bulbs start going off, that people's home equity is crashing against Bitcoin, I believe the next big source of purchasing power is going to be from the transformation of home equity into Bitcoin equity, especially considering that, as Janet Yellen said, again, it's the most important source of wealth for most Americans. Most Americans aren't sitting on millions of dollars in cash, but they might have a couple hundred thousand dollars of home equity, and that could be your last chance to get to a full coin before Bitcoin gets to gold parity.
Self-custody can be a daunting task. That's why I've partnered with Bitbox. They have the best hardware wallet. They make it the easiest to put Bitcoin in self-custody. So go to bitbox.swiss/greencandle today and use promo code greencandle and you can get 5% off your entire order. They make it so easy, all in one. You could get the hardware wallet. You could get their punch plates. You could do it all right there on that website to make the self-custody experience the easiest it can be. So visit bitbox.swiss/greencandle. Use promo code greencandle. Get 5% off your entire order and get your Bitcoin off an exchange into self-custody today. All right, enough for me. Let's get back to the show. Now, that's a great point here about real estate, but I got to maybe ask you, because, I mean, we've seen real estate values in the past 8 years rise by 25%. And then if you look at it priced in Bitcoin, it's decreased by 88%. So explain to me how there is, like, I mean, if the value of the home is going down in Bitcoin terms, then is that beneficial to the loan? Is it less because Bitcoin is so collateralized, or like using it as collateral in this case to buy something that is, you know, in a Bitcoinized world, a depreciating asset? Is that an advantage to the person who's taking out the loan when it's collateralized with Bitcoin?
Right now, and that's a great question. And right now it is an advantage. It is an advantage because let me say it this way. So like I said earlier, People's Reserve has zero cost of capital. We don't go to somebody who gives us a credit line and then we arbitrage the difference between our borrow rate and the rate that we lend you money. We are our own liquidity provider, plus we've sourced other liquidity providers. Well, who are these liquidity providers? What is their mindset? Why are they willing to lend to a Bitcoiner potentially anywhere at as low as 3.5% when they can lend to the government at 4.5%? Well, because the light bulbs are starting to go off. Paul Tudor Jones came out the other day and talked about how the government is stuck in this fiscal dominant situation. No matter if they raise interest rates or lower interest rates, they have to print more money. They have to keep diluting the value of the cash equivalent. There's no choice. They cannot not dilute the cash equivalent. So lenders or capital allocators are starting to think, and I go into these family offices, I go to these high net worth individuals and I say, look, do you have diversification in your equity portfolio? And they say, yeah, of course I do. And I say, well, what about your lending portfolio? if you have diversification in your equity portfolio, don't you think you should have some form of diversification in your lending portfolio? Do you think it's safe to lend all your money to one entity? Do you think it's safe to lend all your money to an entity that could go bankrupt with a corporate debt or whatever type of cash flow vehicle that you're using? Sure, absolutely, to a certain extent. But if you believe in diversification methodology, then one thing that you should be doing in your lending portfolio, in your cash flow vehicle, is incorporating Bitcoiners, especially Bitcoiners who are not just backed by Bitcoin, but also by the real estate. So what they're finding out is it's actually less risky to lend to a counterparty when the loan is over-collateralized with Bitcoin and real estate. And people ask me all the time, well, doesn't the real estate count for anything? Yeah, it does. It technically in the contract, it doesn't. But what it does allow is for the one-to-one ratio, right? Because if it didn't count for anything, then we'd be the same as other lenders and we'd only allow you to borrow 50 to 70% against the value of your collateral. So if you post $1 million of collateral, you'd only be able to borrow $500,000. But because the real estate is cross-collateralized and included in the contract, we can get you to that one-to-one ratio, which is a huge advantage because now you need way less Bitcoin to accomplish your goal. Way less Bitcoin is at risk to purchase your dream home. And of course, we take additional steps to mitigate that risk. If you lose your job, you can always just sell a small portion of your monthly payment. You know, you can make your monthly payment directly from your collateral to get back on your feet and you get that job back again. So we take all the steps to mitigate risk, but the only way you can lose your Bitcoin is if you default on the loan and you don't make your mortgage payment. That's the only way you can lose your Bitcoin. Even if the value of Bitcoin comes down 50%, well, then temporarily your interest payments will go up just a little bit. But over time, as Bitcoin recovers and does what it's engineered to do, then you'll get back to right to where you were or even into a better situation. So yeah, the house, it's not really valued as collateral because of what you said. It's a depreciating asset. It's like a vehicle. You know, people ask, are you going to have it for vehicles? Are you going to have it for planes? Are you going to have it for yachts? It's like, well, these are bad forms of collateral. You know, this adds risk to the lender. But in real estate, us as an LP and the LPs that we sourced, if something were to go wrong, again, we take all the steps to make sure there is no default. But if there were a default scenario, we're not defaulting into a cash equivalent that's been actively diluted over the life of the loan. We're defaulting into inflation-proof assets like real estate and engineered inflation-proof assets like Bitcoin. So much easier to default into assets that you actually want on your balance sheet versus a cash equivalent that you defaulted into and would sell immediately to go buy a real world asset, but you'd be getting a much smaller one because of the dilution through the life of the loan. At People's Reserve, we believe we're redefining the risk-free borrower and redefining the true risk-free rate when it comes to credit markets.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you guys are. And the interesting aspect is the way that you're using real estate with this. But let's get into more of like the business side of things, because obviously we talked a little bit about Michael Saylor and what they're doing. Now we're starting to see, you know, companies like Nakamoto, 21, you know, you kind of hinted at these big corporations utilizing the traditional financial system. You know, Wells Fargo even said that those quiet parts out loud. They had an article and they were saying that the most interesting aspect of this entire Bitcoin bull run is that they're chewing up some of that $300 trillion bond market. And to hear one of a major banks say that is absolutely incredible. And obviously the leader there is Michael Saylor. So, you know, with this, do you think bonds are essentially dead with the way that corporations are going? They're going to, you know, issue this debt to keep scooping up more and more Bitcoin. It seems like all of this debt and corporations to buy more Bitcoin is almost on a house of cards. Is there any potential instability there? Or is Michael Saylor just the genius and he's found this out before everybody else?
Yeah, and I love that question because this is the definition of Bitcoin yield, right? So in the traditional form, in the previous V1 financialization, the definition of Bitcoin yield was, I'll take my Bitcoin and I'll lend it to somebody else and introduce counterparty risk. And in return for that counterparty risk, I'll get paid a yield. Well, what happens is when that counterparty takes it and then rehypothecates it, the house of cards falls on itself. And then you don't get your Bitcoin back. You lose everything. So for a 4 or 5% yield, you risk your entire principal. It makes no sense. That's not Bitcoin yield. Bitcoin yield is paid in terms of reduced fiat denominated debt over the life of the loan. And that's what Michael Saylor has figured out. He has figured out that Bitcoin is engineered money. Bitcoin is strategically designed through the difficulty adjustment and through the security of digital power and the laws of thermodynamics, designed to preserve value and grow value through time. So when you have an asset that is engineered to produce a compounding annual growth rate, it doesn't just happen randomly. It happens through its engineering, through its strategic design. Then when you issue debt, especially at the very low rates that Michael is issuing that debt, what happens is the burden of that debt is eliminated by the collateral asset itself. So as he issues debt and buys Bitcoin, as the value of Bitcoin goes up, the burden of the debt shrinks. In other words, to bring it down to the personal balance sheet, let's say you buy a $500,000 home and you post $500,000 of Bitcoin. Well, that's pretty tight. That's like, man, this is, you know, I'm very happy and thankful for People's Reserve product because it allowed me to do this. If I was borrowing from a traditional lender, I wouldn't even be able to do this because I need to post $1.5 million of Bitcoin to get the $500,000 and sleep at night. But what happens is, Bitcoin's five-year CAGR is over 60%. And I don't know the math when it's over 60%, but I do know the math at 60%. So a five-year CAGR with a 60% on Bitcoin equals a 10x price. Yeah, run the numbers. Check my math. I was kind of blown away by that too. If you put $500,000 down on Bitcoin to buy your $500,000 house, 5 years later at a 60% CAGR, your $500,000 of Bitcoin is now worth $5 million. And the burden of the $500,000 debt against $5 million of pristine collateral is very low. And that is the definition of Bitcoin yield. Bitcoin yield is paid to borrowers and it reduces the fiat denominated burden of debt. And Michael has kind of figured that out. Now, where I think there's risk is when all the copycats come in, right? So innovators like Michael, innovators like People's Reserve, will always be the innovators and there'll always be copycats. But what the copycats are missing is that they're not going to get the terms that Michael's getting. Michael's terms are at 0%, 0.5%, 0.75%, 1%, ATM, zero cost of capital, just through stock dilution, right? So he's set up all of these vehicles where he can pool capital and raise capital with very low cost. Now the copycats have come in and maybe not understood the true definition of Bitcoin yield and are now issuing debts at 2% and 3%. And it's going to continue to climb up because it's the only way they can attract demand and pull demand away from Michael. How do you pull demand away from MicroStrategy? Well, instead of offering a product that pays 0.75%, you offer a product that pays 1.5%. And then what about the next copycat? Well, they offer 2%. And what about the next copy? They offer 4%. So as more and more people jump into the market and becomes more saturated, the cost of capital is going to increase. At some point in time along that cost of capital curve, people who pay a certain price for that capital when Bitcoin has a downturn moment are going to be in trouble, are going to be forced liquidated. So I think it's not like the whole industry is in the same boat. Each individual company is in their own separate boat. And Michael is sitting strong with his balance sheet. I think right now, every $1,000 that Bitcoin goes up, the natural asset value of MicroStrategy's balance sheet goes up like $586 million. So the amount of value that can be driven into the company and the balance sheet is just staggering. So that's why I hold my MicroStrategy shares and have no plans to sell my MicroStrategy shares really ever, because I do believe Michael will successfully make MicroStrategy a central bank of the internet economy. I think that's the long-term plan. And at People's Reserve, we couldn't be more excited to build on top of Michael Saylor's shoulders. And one thing that we're working in the background, we are trying to do a reverse merger with a special purpose acquisition company. We want to get access to capital markets. We want to be a Bitcoin treasury company that accumulates Bitcoin. But there's a little caveat here. We have an ecosystem of financial engineering, not just for corporations and institutions, but for retail in our Bitcoin-powered mortgage product and in our cash flow vehicle, which is a principal protected note, which we call our Bitcoin bond. So by offering these retail products, and remember, I said we're a one-stop shop. What does that mean? that means that you can do a lot of things with us. These are just the main services we talk about. But if you're using a different type of centralized service right now, when you come and get your mortgage with us, it's going to be very easy just to switch over and start doing everything with us. Why get treated like royalty and rewarded for your loyalty at People's Reserve for your mortgage, but then still stay with somebody else who's treating you like the guy who just signed up last week, even though you've been with them for 10 years. So we believe that that ecosystem will create significant revenues, and those revenues will actually flow back up to People's Reserve Inc., our umbrella corporation, which is the corporation we were trying to perform the reverse merger with, and we'll actually be able to pay dividends. So that's our short-term goal here at People's Reserve, to become the first Bitcoin treasury company that has the ability, the means, and the desire to pay dividends. Because I hold my Bitcoin for long-term appreciation, right? So I don't really need my MicroStrategy for long-term appreciation. That's what my Bitcoin's for. I hold my MicroStrategy, which I have a split adjusted price of $27. So I've been on with Michael for a very long time, and I will never sell. I'll hand those down to my kids because I believe he's going to make it a central bank of the internet economy. And I believe that in the future, when MicroStrategy has an interbank lending rate with People's Reserve, that interbank lending rate between those Bitcoin treasury companies, that is actually going to formulate and be the equivalent of what today's federal funds rate is. So the federal funds rate, the very front end of the yield curve, is the interbank, the overnight interbank rate. Well, in the decentralized internet economy, which is the only economy in the world that no one country can control or outcompete, and most importantly, it's the only economy in the world with true free market interest rates, the front end of that yield curve is actually established by borrow rates between Bitcoin treasury companies like People's Reserve and MicroStrategy. So I hold my MicroStrategy as an investment, as a speculative investment that Michael will be successful and that MicroStrategy will turn into a central bank of the internet economy. I hold my Bitcoin for long-term appreciation. And at People's Reserve, we want to meet in the middle. Yes, you're going to hold People's Reserve equity because you want to speculate on the fact that we may become a central bank of the internet economy in the future. However, what about today? What do I get today from holding that? I have long-term savings in my Bitcoin. Well, that's where the revenues come in. The revenues from our ecosystem that we are going to generate through financial engineering through retail will pay out dividends and create cash flow. So it's not going to be a separated cash flow vehicle where you lose exposure to Bitcoin and Bitcoin upside. It's actually going to be a cash flow vehicle through the dividend distribution that maintains exposure to Bitcoin upside. So you get the long-term speculative upside of People's Reserve becoming a central bank of the internet economy, but then you also get the dividends or the cash flow from owning that equity without having to give up that equity and use a different vehicle to generate the cash flow. And there's going to be different solutions for different people. It's a free market. There should be different solutions. Like I said, I'm not selling my MicroStrategy shares for any reason. So there's going to be reason and to own both and to be involved in both markets because there's many different solutions in a true free market. And I think we're both spearheading those solutions. And like I said, we're building on top of Michael Saylor. I look up to Michael Saylor. He's the one who opened the Pandora's box of financial engineering. And we couldn't be more excited to not only take notes on his Bitcoin treasury company strategy, but also to embrace his digital asset framework, which I think, Brendan, not many people talk about his digital asset framework. I don't know why.
Yeah, then let's go into that. Then talk about it, CJ. Tell us a little bit more about his digital asset framework. I mean, you just alley-ooped yourself, man. Let's go dive into it.
What's that meme where Obama is putting the medal on it? I feel like I just put the, you know, put the medal on it. Well, look, Michael Saylor, his digital asset framework is amazing. And the United States needs to embrace that framework immediately. We don't want to take the risk of falling behind in being a global financial leader. And by ignoring that digital asset framework, that's exactly what we're doing. So we need to codify this executive order of a strategic Bitcoin reserve. We need to get that passed and legislated so that it's law that we have a strategic Bitcoin reserve and that a future administration can't just come in and nullify that executive order. And part of that is the embracing of Michael Saylor's digital asset framework of Bitcoin as a digital commodity. Bitcoin as a digital commodity is an asset with no issuer secured by digital power. And of course, for those who follow me, they know that that's Bitcoin fair value. That's hash rate relative to cost of production. that's digital power. It's the laws of thermodynamics, that value cannot be created or destroyed. That's what makes Bitcoin pristine collateral. That's what makes Bitcoin the reserve asset of the digital economy. And that's the core, that's the crux of the foundation of the of his digital asset framework. But other things that they don't talk about include the tokenization of digital securities, digital commodities like gold and oil, and of course, companies trading 24/7. I think I saw Pomp come out today and talk about how, isn't it crazy that like the markets were closed last night? We saw this crazy thing happen over in the Middle East. Bitcoin got to react because it's traded 24/7 because it's money and money markets should be 24/7, but the stock market didn't get to react. You're like sitting there twiddling your thumbs, like, what do I do? What do I do? You know, what actions am I going to take tomorrow? The market's closed. It's kind of a crazy concept that the market is closed. So we see in the internet economy that the money market is going to be a 24/7 economy. But something that gets ignored from Michael Saylor's digital asset framework is the digital token asset or the digital utility token. And I just announced today on the Charlie Shrem show that People's Reserve is embracing Michael Saylor's digital asset framework by launching a digital utility token. This is a loyalty token that provides utility in the People's Reserve ecosystem. Now, I know a lot of those Bitcoin maxis right now are probably like, wait a second, CJ's a Bitcoin maxi. You're damn right on Bitcoin maxi. There should be no confusion whatsoever. Bitcoin is money. Nothing can compete with Bitcoin. And anything that tries to compete with Bitcoin is a scam. But PRN loyalty tokens, they don't compete with Bitcoin at all. They're not money. They're a digital utility token, according to Michael Saylor's digital asset framework. And what is that utility? Well, this is another exciting announcement we made. We've officially released the interest rates on our Bitcoin-powered mortgages. And our loyalty levels on our platform go from basic, silver, gold, and diamond. And depending what loyalty level you are, that is the starting interest rate of your Bitcoin-powered mortgage. So if you don't believe in Michael Saylor's digital asset framework or that there's a use case for digital token assets or digital utility tokens, that's fine. You don't have to participate. We're still happy to work with you. And you'll start at the basic rate, which is 10.5%. You'll also still get the full benefit of being able to post additional collateral to buy back points. The maximum over collateralization level is 200%. So if you borrow 500,000 and need to post 500,000, but you post 1.5 million of collateral, you will shave off the maximum amount of interest rate points, which would be 4%. Because for every 10% you over collateralize, you get a 20 basis point discount. So if you maximize that over collateralization, you can reduce your interest rate by 4 percentage points. So 10.5 minus the 4 percentage points is 6.5. So even as a basic user that does not establish a loyalty level, you're getting very competitive rates when measured against the current traditional rates. As a matter of fact, it's actually prime minus because the prime interest rate today is 7.5%. And as a basic member with max over collateralization, you can get 6.5%. So that's prime minus 1%. But what comes really exciting is that, you know, at People's Reserve, if you display your loyalty, then we're going to treat you like royalty. Well, how do we do that? How do we secure the fundamental value of the PRN token? Why does it have any value whatsoever? Well, because there are calculable economic benefits to establishing your loyalty level. Because when you're a Diamond member, your starting interest rate is 7.5%. So if you fully over collateralize, you can knock off 4 percentage points from that. You can get a Bitcoin powered mortgage for 3.5%. That's lower than the risk-free rate in the marketplace right now. The government is borrowing at 4.5%. You, as a Bitcoiner, can borrow at 3.5%. That's why People's Reserve is here, to establish you as the responsible saver of Bitcoin as the risk-free borrower, giving you access to the true risk-free rate of return. Our LPs understand that lending to you in a securitized loan with real estate and Bitcoin is actually less risky than lending to an entity with a printer with principal held in a collateral that's diluted over time. So whether you're loyal to us through our loyalty token program or not, you're still going to get extremely beneficial interest rates and access. Because as a basic member, like I said, you start at 10.5, but if you over collateralize, you're at 6.5. Well, industry standard interest rates right now are anywhere between like if you're going to provide multi-millions of dollars of collateral just to borrow a little bit of money, you can get around 9%. but most rates are in that 10 to 16% range, again, with 50 to 70% LTV. So at People's Reserve, even as somebody who is not participating in the loyalty program, you're still getting access to the most competitive interest rates in the industry that measure up better with TradFi than they do with any other offer that you can get in the digital economy. But embracing our loyalty program, I like to say it like this. Don't speculate. Calculate your benefits with PRN. What is the difference if you go at basic and borrow at 10.5% versus starting at 7.5%? How much are you going to save? What if you over-collateralize? What if you say, you know what? I have the option to go to another lender. I can borrow 50 to 70% of the collateral that I post. I have liquidation risk, but I got to pay 10% or 12% interest to make it happen. I can go over to People's Reserve. I can post 1-to-1 and get 7.5. So the difference between 7.5 and whatever that other interest rate is, 12%, 5 percentage basis points, or you can over collateralize and get 3.5. So what if you're paying 13.5 with a traditional digital economy lender, but at People's Reserve, you're fully over collateralized. You've established your diamond loyalty level. You're borrowing at 3.5. That's 10%. That's an insane amount of interest. That is true, calculable economic benefit. And that's what I'm most excited about. As somebody in this has been in this industry for over 12 years and understands that the vast majority of crypto is an absolute scam and is secured for no reason whatsoever, and tokens trade at billions of dollars of valuation that have no value, why would I do that? Why would I participate in that? I've already went through that scam cycle. I already know what it's like to get rugged. This is not what that is. This is the embracing of Michael Saylor's digital asset framework. This is the advent of a digital utility token that exists because of Bitcoin, not to compete with Bitcoin, but to complement Bitcoin, to empower responsible savers of Bitcoin, to deliver to you real calculable economic benefits that you're not going to be able to get anywhere else, because People's Reserve mission is to establish you as the risk-free borrower and give you access to these risk-free interest rates. And the savings that you're able to make are going to be able to be used to increase your quality of life or standard of living. I'm sure some people will use those savings to accumulate more Bitcoin, and that's definitely a smart thing to do now at the bottom of the S-curve. But even as we move through that S-curve transition and the transfer of wealth, we are empowering you to save money on your expenses. And when you save money on your expenses, you can increase your quality of life and standard of living today. And that's what we're most excited about with the launch of our PRN utility token.
Yeah, and that's interesting, CJ. And now you're basically telling me, all right, I'm going to never need to sell my Bitcoin ever, right? And like, if you look at the numbers, I believe there's just like 2 million to 3 million Bitcoin left on an exchanges at this current time. There's, you know, very little Bitcoin that's mined every single day. Now, where do you think we're going with this cycle? Because it seems like everybody's incentivizing, you know, the retail not to sell. That's what basically people have been, you know, saying that this market has been floating around the 100 to 110 mark strictly because whales have been selling off and they had maybe that 100K mental mark. Now, if they don't need to sell and all these products are popping up, then how high are we going here?
That is my favorite question. And I'll tell you why, because the dynamics in the marketplace change. As the price of Bitcoin goes up, you become more deleveraged. So Bitcoin as a pristine collateral is an auto deleveraging mechanism. So as people try to entice people to sell by raising the price that they're willing to offer for the Bitcoin, if you're utilizing your Bitcoin with the proper financial tools and you're being powered by your established loyalty level to maximize your savings and your cost of capital, there is no price that can convince you to sell. As a matter of fact, a higher price just puts you in a more healthy position. The higher the price goes, the stronger your loan to value becomes. The stronger your loan to value becomes, the lower the burden of your fiat denominated debt. So there is no price that can convince you if you have access and are using the proper financial tools to unlock the purchasing power of your Bitcoin. So as people figure this out, what they're going to realize is that the infinity over 21 million meme is actually a reality post-financialization. And post access to the proper tools that reduce your cost of capital and create economic incentive through loyalty and through unlocking Bitcoin's purchasing power without having to give up ownership. For those of us who embrace these financial tools, there is no price that can convince us to sell. The only thing that will convince us to sell is that once Bitcoin becomes a medium of exchange and unit of account, and it covers all store of value, medium of exchange, unit of account, then when we're at the top of the price curve, every single country is in Bitcoin, every single sovereign wealth fund, every single pension plan, everybody has exposure to Bitcoin, and the adoption process has come to completion. That's probably going to be our kids, right? This goes to like 21. We're still in the issuance schedule. Remember how long it took to go from yap stones to seashells, and then seashells to like some metals and other thing, and then to precious metals. Like, this took thousands of years. We're on year 16. So we want to make sure from year 16 to the point when adoption is actually finally done, and then it starts to make sense to actually spend your Bitcoin, and then there is a price that actually incentivizes you to sell your Bitcoin because you want to spend it when the economy was strong and you're getting the most purchasing power for it. In between that time and now, you need the financial tools that allow you to unlock purchasing power without giving up ownership. Giving up ownership is the worst decision that you can possibly make. You're going to end up in the same situation as me, where you keep looking at your house and saying, man, my house is not worth $10 million. What happens when Bitcoin goes to $1 million and gold parity? My house is not going to be worth $100 million. Are you kidding me? Like, oh my gosh, I'm already like, no. I'm like that meme with the guy with the mask. You know, he's like under, the mask is smiling, but underwards, he's like, oh, you see like the tears coming down. Like, oh, you know, I'm happy. But yeah. And it's true. I am happy. You know, I had many memories in that house with my wife and my family, and it's worth any price that you put on it. But for those who haven't made that decision yet, man, it's time to embrace the financial tools that help you unlock that Bitcoin purchasing power without giving up ownership, because there is no price that can convince you to sell. There should be no price that can convince you to sell. Even in an emergency situation, you can borrow against your Bitcoin and then use the cash flow from your job to close that liability. In the end, the emergency situation is solved and you still have your Bitcoin. So the advent of the tools that are coming through the financialization of Bitcoin through responsible counterparties like People's Reserve, where there's no rehypothecation, collateral can be held in multi-sig, collateral is held in a bankruptcy remote fashion so that if something happens to People's Reserve, your coins aren't being sucked into that. They get distributed back to you. Going down the checklist and making sure that this is done right is what this industry needs. And that's what we're excited to be able to do, to step up to the plate and deliver on the promises that should have been kept the first time around. But this time around, V2 financialization, we're going to make sure that the Bitcoiner gets put first, that the relationship gets put first, that profit comes second. And we believe in the long term, the profit will come. The success of the business will come. And my kids will do business with your kids because we've embraced the Bitcoin mindset. And we've left behind this fiat maximalism mindset, which plagues the whole world.
Well, CJ, you didn't give me a number, man. I need to know. What do you think? Is this the last cycle? Like, what are we? You said, all right, Bitcoin to 1 million taking over gold. Do you think we get there in the next 4 years or so? Or I guess before the, do you still see us as getting into these downturns strictly because of this? Because I guess I'll preface the question a bit. I mean, I see these buyers coming in. They're corporations, right? They're nation states. They're the big dogs coming in with massive amounts of money. But the unique thing about all of them is that they're not necessarily going in and trading, right? Before we had retail come in and that was kind of the big dogs. And, you know, you saw the retail hodlers come in and, you know, play around with the speculation and everything before Bitcoin was, I guess, almost like truly legitimized, it seems. But now, you know, all these nation states and everybody's coming in like this. Cynthia Lummis is saying, hey, the U.S. buy 1 million coins and not hold it for 20 years and just put that into law. So, you know, long-winded way of saying, do you think that this is the last cycle? And if so, like, or and if not, what? How high are we going before you think we do what Bitcoin does and, you know, hits the little downturn before the next cycle?
Holding me to the fire. Holding me. All right. Well, I have a thesis on this. And for those who follow along with me, I have created an algorithm called the Bitcoin Fair Value Indicator, right? So it's an indicator that I use for myself. I don't sell it. I just share some of those posts on the Bitcoin Fair Value X account so that people can follow along. But like I actually use it, so I don't share it because then I'd be giving away too much. I value it too much to just give it away or even to sell it because it'll dilute its effectiveness, I believe. So I use it in the management of my personal balance sheet. And Bitcoin fair value right now, I have around $320,000. And we've backtested Bitcoin fair value. I mean, I've been using it for a long time, but we've backtested it all the way to like 2012, because before 2012, it was really hard to find like minor cost of production. So we've been able to get electric rates and kind of do what we can going back to 2012. There has never been a Bitcoin bull market where the price of Bitcoin did not go above Bitcoin fair value before entering an elongated bear market. So I think the Bitcoin fair value is the most effective way to measure how hot or cold the market is, because it's relative to the price discovery of the asset itself. Like, we all vote with our dollars for the value proposition of Bitcoin, right? And if Bitcoin is too expensive, then you're voting no. Like, if you see the Bitcoin price and say, I'm not going to buy it, then you're actually voting no to the value proposition of Bitcoin, which is a truth ledger in a world of lies. So literally infinity over 21 million is the proper value, because there's no greater value proposition than truth money that gives you financial freedom and sovereignty to be your own bank, especially in a world of lies where the existing infrastructure is extracting value from you on a daily basis. So that value proposition goes through price discovery cycles. And I believe since the advent of Bitcoin, we've been in a commodity cycle. We are going in a commodity cycle where the price of Bitcoin is relative to its cost. And then you do get to points where the premium to the fair value is so high that even the earners of the block reward understand what their costs are and say, wow, at this point, we should be selling a lot of this into the market. And then, you know, when people vote no and that premium starts to come back down to fair value, we'll redeploy this cash and we'll get more Bitcoin, because we're not just mining Bitcoin with our hash rate. We're also mining Bitcoin with our treasury. So for that reason, it's very interesting to me that Bitcoin fair value is at 320,000, because typically you can get to like 100. Like, so in the earlier cycles, you'd be getting to like 300-400% premiums to BFV. But these diminishing returns that we see are actually present in premiums to Bitcoin fair value as well. And that's because of the fiduciary responsibility of these publicly traded miners. Once you get to a certain profit margin, you're kind of forced to lock in profit for your shareholders. And if you don't lock in that profit, and we go into a bear market, you could get sued. You could be held responsible that you didn't uphold your fiduciary responsibility to create profit for your shareholders. So for that reason, when we get to the premium to BFV, the last cycle, it got up to just over 100%. And then the previous cycle was like closer to like 200%. And then the previous cycle before that was like 400%. So the OG miners were like, bring it on, baby. And then the privatized miners were like, well, we got to lock it in. And then the last cycle, the public miners were like, we absolutely have a fiduciary responsibility to lock this in. So those premiums have been diminishing. But if you get 100% premium to BFV today, you're talking about $640,000 Bitcoin. So my indicator would signal around $640,000 Bitcoin. Hey, we might be at a point now where kind of like just 100,000. 100,000 is like that mental mindset that you were talking about. It's like a mental blocker. There's no technical resistance there. It's just like a mental hurdle. But the real technical resistance, if you subscribe to BFV like I do, is that 100% premium to BFV around 640. Now, with all of that being said, when is my model invalidated? When is it wrong? Well, I think we might actually be living through that time right now, because it becomes what, like Michael Saylor said, all your models will be destroyed, right? Well, this has been a great model. This model has helped me outperform the market significantly. However, it will be destroyed. And I think it gets destroyed as we transition from a commodity cycle to a money cycle or to a credit cycle. And that's what through the financialization, that's what's happening. So through monetization, the commodity cycle was solidified. But beyond monetization and through financialization, I believe the cycle is actually maturing out of a commodity cycle into a credit cycle or money cycle. And what does that mean? That means that if Bitcoin gets to 640,000 and is at 100% premium to BFV, that might not be the spot. That might not be the time that we actually see a prolonged bear market, because now we're getting out of the commodity cycle where premiums to fair value matter less. And what matters more is what you were talking about, the leverage within the market, the leverage of these Bitcoin treasury companies who are issuing debt to buy Bitcoin. that's what starts to matter more. So as the price goes higher and higher, if leverage starts to outpace growth of the asset class itself, then we're going to get a correction. And where's that correction going to come to? Probably fair value. I believe fair value is a great spot to come to, because that's the price that's needed to sustain the network, right? And if that were wrong, then hash rate would be shrinking. But there's very few times in the network that hash rate actually shrinks. If you look at the hash rate chart, it's parabolic, and there's no sign of it stopping anytime soon, because the subsidy that they earn provides a value proposition that no other asset class in the world provides. So that price discovery process is maturing with the marketplace from a commodity cycle to a money cycle. Therefore, I don't really have a model to measure the upside. So now it just becomes a measure of market capitalization. And that's why I said to the upside, I think, yeah, we get to single family home pretty easily. And once you get beyond single family home, you kind of hit a hard spot, right? Because now you're above BFV and the premiums are there, and more coins are entering, you know, those dormant coins are entering back into the market, especially with these bigger financial institutions. They too have a fiduciary responsibility. If they buy Bitcoin at 100,000, it goes to six, they're going to have to lock in profits. They're going to have to build a cash position, generate some cash flow with that cash, and wait for a pullback. Whether that pullback comes, nobody can say, but historically, absolutely the pullback comes. It always comes. That's where the buy the dip memes come from. So will there be dips? Absolutely. Will they be as strong as they were through the commodity cycle, coming back 70, 80%? I don't think so. I think, you know, TradFi defines a bear market as 20%. We got the pullback from 108, 109 down to 74. I mean, at 74, people were calling for 60, 50. I mean, even liquidation prices down to 40. Never came. Now we're back up over 100. So I think the downside is going to be more muted, and I think the upside is going to be more volatile and more aggressive. And the only metric there is for me, not having a model to measure money or credit cycles, is parity with gold. So I think we stop at single family home. I think we have the 100% premium to BFV around the 640 area. And then I think from there, we go to $20 trillion plus market cap. So $1 million Bitcoin to get on parity with gold. I mean, Bitcoin is being institutionalized as digital gold. So it makes sense for the market cap to match the digital gold market cap. And then beyond there, I mean, my mom always told me this, write your plans in pencil unless you want to make God laugh, right? So we don't want to look too far down and too far out thinking we know exactly what's going to happen. But I think in the short to medium term, all of these price points are very realistic, because Bitcoin has been monetized as digital gold. The financial tools are being released that create this financialization of the asset class that's going to drive monetary premium into the asset class the same way it did when real estate was financialized in the 70s. And that's going to drive us to the $1 million value. Beyond that, I can't in good conscience say.
All right. Well, it sounds like, you know, you're the reason that your model's going to break, man. You're opening up this credit and debt cycle. So you're the one that's going to destroy your own model. How does that feel to you? Like, you're just coming in with the hammer and just being like, all right, F breaking your models, my own models. I'm going to destroy it myself.
No, Michael, I'm breaking my own model. No, but this is part of the maturation of the asset class. So for me, it's just super exciting, because I don't really care about my model. That model is just used so that I could perform at a higher rate. But now I'm going to enable, through People's Reserve, we are going to enable everybody to perform at a higher rate, because we're going to solve your problem of giving up ownership and unlocking that purchasing power without having to sell it. And that's going to be a big deal. Keeping that Bitcoin in your family can change the future of your family. You can set up generations of your family and still benefit today, right? Like, you shouldn't have to give up generational wealth to get shelter for one generation. That does not make sense. So being able to empower other Bitcoiners, I'm very happy to sacrifice the model and crush it, bring the hammer down on the model by empowering other Bitcoiners to do what is going to help them and their families moving into the future. And then, you know, you mentioned the bond market, the $300 trillion bond market. And I don't talk about this product as much as I do the Bitcoin-powered mortgage, but I think it's just as important, because after I bought my house, then I realized, I have to pay taxes. I have to, like, maintain the house. What do you mean the house needs a new air conditioner? What do you mean I need a new roof? What do you mean I got a landscaping? What, they're charging what to mow my lawn? Are you kidding me? I can't wait for my kids to grow up and start mowing the lawn. What is going on here? All of these costs. Now I have to sell more Bitcoin? I just gave up 100 Bitcoin. I have to sell more Bitcoin? And I told this story on the Charlie Shrem podcast. It's funny, the timing works up that way. But when I first met Charlie, it was in the bear market of 2018. I went back to work. I was good. I was in a healthy position. Bitcoin had raised me up to a point where I didn't need to work. But I looked at the price of Bitcoin and I knew where we were. And I said, man, I just had to give up these Bitcoins to get my home. There's no way I'm selling any more Bitcoin. I would rather go back to work to the fiat cash tax slave farms to earn some money than give up my Bitcoin. Forget that. I am not giving up any more Bitcoin. And I literally went back. I was serving tables in Captiva Island, Florida, this nice restaurant, Green Flash. Charlie comes sailing up in his yacht called Satoshi. And my manager's like, CJ, you got tables. I'm like, you know who that is? Give my tables to someone else. I'm talking to Charlie, you know? And it's just hilarious because that's a Bitcoiner's mindset, right? Bitcoin, you don't change Bitcoin, Bitcoin changes you. And I had known that it would be more important to put my time and energy to farm fiat and save my Bitcoin than it would to give up my Bitcoin because I'm giving up tremendous upside. And we're all in that position today. So whether we want to admit it or not, cash flow is an important element to everybody's portfolio. And if you don't have a portfolio that's generating cash flow, then your time and energy is what's going to be needed to generate cash flow. So at People's Reserve, our Bitcoin bond, our principal protected note, which we call a Bitcoin bond because it is a bond where the yield is produced by the performance of Bitcoin. This is our cash flow vehicle. This is our cash flow solution for Bitcoiners who understand, look, I need to generate cash flow to pay for my expenses, to maintain my quality of life and standard of living for my family. But I don't want to give up exposure to Bitcoin. I'd be a fool to give up exposure to Bitcoin. So what am I going to do? I'm going to liquidate what I need to liquidate, but I'm going to put it into a Bitcoin bond. And what's so exciting about the Bitcoin bond, let's say you put like $1 million into a Bitcoin bond. Well, the current risk-free interest rate in the marketplace, risk-free, is 4.5%. So at a 4.5% interest rate, and whether that's treasury debt or in some cases, it will actually be municipal, United States municipal debt, which has a higher credit rating than federal debt. That 4.5% rate, that determines the allocation model in the principal protected note. So at 4.5%, it becomes an 80-20 split. So if you invest $1 million, you're going to earn 4.5% on the $800,000 over the 5-year life of the principal protected note. And what happens is that 4.5% applied to the $800,000 over 5 years, when you add up all of the interest payments that you receive quarterly over those 5 years, and then the note matures and you receive your principal balance of $800,000 back, $800,000 plus interest received equals the $1 million investment. So your $1 million is secured by the full faith and credit of the United States government, and it's backed by the printer. You're going to get that $1 million back no matter what. What you're going to be able to buy with it, nobody knows, but you're definitely going to be able to get it back. So what's left over, though, is the $200,000 of Bitcoin price performance. And this is where things get excited, because with a 5-year CAGR of over 60%, like I said earlier, that 60% CAGR rate actually produces a 10X. So that $200,000 allocation will be worth $2 million over that 5-year period. And what that means is the principal protected note matures with a value of $3 million. That's 40% APY. And even if we say, well, what if Bitcoin doesn't perform that well? What if we come back to Michael Saylor's long-term thesis of a 30% CAGR? Well, that's 20% APY. That means you're using a cash flow vehicle that's producing a yield that's greater than the true rate of inflation. It's probably the only cash flow vehicle in the world that produces a real positive rate of return. And what does that mean for you as a Bitcoiner who's just trying to get exposure to a cash flow vehicle so that you don't have to clock in and clock out on the fiat tax slave farms? It means that upon maturation, it's like getting a raise, because instead of rolling one, like if you put $1 million into treasuries and you get your interest payments and then it matures, you get your $1 million back. That's all you have left is $1 million. So you can roll $1 million into the next issuance of treasuries for the next 5 years. But with a Bitcoin bond, you have the opportunity to roll 3 million. So you can increase your cash flows. It's like getting a promotion at your job. So what you'll do is you'll sit down and calculate the cash flow that is required to maintain your standard of living and your quality of life. Or if you want to increase your standard of living and quality of life, you calculate what you need and then you roll that amount. So let's say instead of rolling a million, only having the option to roll a million, it matured with a value of 3 million. You have the option to roll 3 million. You can increase your cash flows by 200%. You could triple your lifestyle if you wanted to, or you could double your lifestyle. Maybe over those 5 years you had a kid, or maybe even you had two kids. So you need to increase those cash flows. Roll what you need to into the next issuance and then take the extra and stack more sats for your kids and for your grandchildren. We're super excited about our principal protected note because it solves a big problem on the personal level. But Brandon, if you'll just let me rip here for an extra minute, it's not just about the person. It's about small and medium-sized businesses. Why can Bitcoin treasury companies add Bitcoin to their balance sheet, but small and medium-sized businesses can't add Bitcoin to their balance sheet? I'll tell you why. Because when you take your business revenues and you put them directly into Bitcoin, that Bitcoin goes on your balance sheet and it becomes trapped equity. If you sell that Bitcoin, there's going to be tax obligations. And what happens if you need to sell that Bitcoin to hire a new employee or to buy new equipment or to service a new area or zone? And you happen to do it when something goes down in the Middle East, or you happen to do it when we're in a liquidity event and the price is down 50% for some reason. It becomes trapped equity. You're taking your business revenues and you're trapping it on your balance sheet. You cannot do that as a small and medium-sized business. All small and medium-sized businesses need to reinvest their revenues. They need to take those revenues to hire new employees, increase land, labor, and material, and grow the business. So you can't trap the equity on your balance sheet. Enter Bitcoin bonds. We finally have a solution for small and medium-sized businesses. You take your business revenues, you buy a Bitcoin bond, you keep the Bitcoin bond on your balance sheet. Now, if you need to increase land, labor, and materials, hire a new employee, or get new equipment, whatever it is, you can simply borrow against your Bitcoin bond. We at People's Reserve treat Bitcoin bonds as pristine collateral. So you as a small and medium-sized business can post that Bitcoin bond as pristine collateral and unlock the equity value of your revenues on your balance sheet without giving up ownership. You can buy that new piece of equipment without having to spend the dollars because you're spending borrowed dollars against your Bitcoin bond. Then you can use the cash flows generated from your business and from that new job to close the loan. At the end of it, you have the equity value on your balance sheet plus the new equipment plus a bigger, stronger business. Bitcoin bonds solve the small, medium-sized business problem of getting Bitcoin on your balance sheet because they allow you to unlock your revenue equity without giving up ownership. You literally get the best of both worlds. Your revenues sit on your balance sheet, creating real positive rates of return of cash flow for your business. But then when you hit that spot where you need to expand or hire or get more equipment, you don't actually have to spend that value off your balance sheet. It can stay there earning for you. But at the same time, you can unlock that purchasing power by posting it as pristine collateral at People's Reserve. So we're really excited not to just empower the individual, but to empower the SMBs who for a very long time have been waiting for a solution to get exposure to Bitcoin on their balance sheet without giving up revenue and forcing it to be trapped equity.
The best place to buy Bitcoin in the United States and Canada is the Bitcoin Well. You could go to the bitcoinwell.com/greencandle and sign up today, and they will give you wishing well tokens. They are one of the only exchanges in the United States that will give you free sats every time you buy Bitcoin. You have a chance to win 1 million sats every time you buy. You get wishing well tokens, you flip the coin down the wishing well, and you have the chance to win 1 million sats. You heard me here, folks, 1 million sats. And on top of that, they have the absolute best over-the-counter service where you can make purchases over $50,000, and they will walk you through the whole thing. They have the best rates in the United States and in Canada. And on top of that, they have the best white glove service where they will take you through those giant purchases just so you feel comfortable. You'll get it in cold storage and it's strictly non-custodial. They are saying, we want you to experience the true power of Bitcoin and that self-custody. So go to the well, sign up, bitcoinwell.com/greencandle today. Enough for me, back to the show. Yeah. And I mean, you know, the one question comes to mind with all of this is we've been talking about collateral and utilizing Bitcoin to essentially, you know, live your life as the pristine collateral, as Michael Saylor puts it. But Jack Dorsey came out and said, if Bitcoin doesn't get to peer-to-peer cash, it's failed. So do you see us ever getting to that point?
Yeah, absolutely. After mainstream adoption. At the top of the S-curve, when it makes sense to spend your Bitcoin because the transfer of wealth is done, then we'll have a Bitcoin circular economy. Then I think these other things won't matter. But in the interim, remember, a monetary asset starts out as a store of value. It matures into a medium of exchange, which then matures it into a unit of account. We're in year 16, not 1600, not 160, year 16. So we are at the very beginning of this process. And at the beginning of this process, I believe the best way to spend your Bitcoin at this time, the best L2 for Bitcoin is borrowed dollars. Dollars are accepted everywhere in the world. They're a universal currency. Remember, there's a difference between currency and money. Currency is for spending. Money is for saving. So we can use both of these tools. They're both financial tools. We use the money to save. Well, we don't want to spend our money. We want to save it. Well, how do we spend our money when we need to tap into that equity value? Well, you borrow currency against the money and you spend the currency and you allow the money to mature over time and that currency dilutes over time. So when you can borrow an inflationary currency against a deflationary money, you're in the perfect scenario. You are now the elite. You are now the cantillionaire. You are now closest to the printer because you hold the pristine collateral that prints value and you're spending the non-pristine, dilutionary, inflationary fiat currency units that lose value. This is how Bitcoin becomes a medium of exchange because it will just be understood that you don't save currency units. You can't. You save money. And when you want to spend your money, you just spend borrowed currency units against the money. And then naturally, through its engineered design, the burden of that debt shrinks over time. And when that becomes obvious, no price of Bitcoin can convince you to sell. And everybody who's spending currency is going to be spending currency that's really backed by money. The same way dollars were, right? Gold-backed dollars, people traded dollars. The dollars were just a currency. They were just a medium of exchange. The real value, the real settlement layer was the gold. And it worked perfect until the system was abused and they removed the gold. Well, same thing with Bitcoin. It becomes the new layer one reserve asset of the digital economy. And you spend these currency units borrowed against it. And Bitcoin keeps you in check because if the expansion of those currency units becomes too large, the value of the Bitcoin will be forced to go up because you can't create any more of it. So it's like a safety mechanism. It's unbelievable. The relationship between money and currency is not understood well enough. But when that light bulb clicks for you, you understand. No, I'm not going to spend my Bitcoin by actually giving up ownership of it. I'm going to spend my Bitcoin by spending borrowed currency units against my money. And in that way, Bitcoiners are actually delivering significant value into the economy. Not that long ago, I did an interview with Katie from Citizen X out in Vegas, and she was asking about how governments are going to start incentivizing Bitcoiners. And it's a very astute question and a great topic of discussion because Bitcoiners are where all the purchasing power is going to go. Bitcoiners are going to be the one who are spending all of the purchasing power, and the smart Bitcoiners are going to spend that purchasing power without giving up ownership so that they have a perpetual source of purchasing power, just like the cantillionaires now. They print the money and they spend it in the circulation, and hey, it trickles down to you. Be happy. Well, no, thank you. I think I'll save in Bitcoin and let that value accrue to my balance sheet, and then I'll spend that value into the economy, and the more you spend, the more value you're driving into my balance sheet. Thank you. Come again. This is the real dynamic and the real empowerment of using Bitcoin as your savings technology and allowing its engineered design to work for you, to deliver value for you. So opt out of the system that's extracting value for you and opt into the system that consistently and perpetually delivers value back to you.
No, I mean, I love that. CJ, you're the man with all this stuff. And, you know, when it comes to the peer-to-peer cash, it seems like it's kind of a long way away. But you mentioned something with gold where, you know, it was essentially the backing of the fiat currency until humans corrupted it. Now, that leads to the question, if we get to a hyper Bitcoinized world, is there a chance you think that humans could try to corrupt this Bitcoinized system? Or is it, you know, the, as the Bitcoiners say, fix the money, fix the world kind of thing. And, you know, we're going to have flying cars here in 20 years time.
I think this is a very important question. This question should not be overlooked. And I appreciate, Brandon, that you brought up this question, because I think we're seeing a little bit of that right now with this op return argument, removing the data limits on that. To me, Bitcoin is a monetary network. So if you want to make changes to Bitcoin, let's do it after the transfer of wealth is complete. Let's allow the transfer of wealth to take place. Let's allow adoption to come to completion, and then we can make changes to Bitcoin. So if there are some changes we need to make, like quantum resistance, right? Like quantum computers are going to be a thing, and people get worried about that. Like, well, you know, isn't Bitcoin going to break? No, because when quantum computer, it's not going to be valuable for a quantum computer to break Bitcoin. It's going to be valuable for a quantum computer to mine Bitcoin and then sell the block subsidy on the marketplace. That's where you're going to create profit, right? Profit is the invisible hand that drives the marketplace. So the advent of quantum computing is actually just going to make hash rate grow even more. Like hash rate chart is already like this. It's like that. It's like that meme chart where it's like goes backwards because it's going so high so fast it just goes backwards. Like that's what quantum computing is going to do to the Bitcoin network. So once we get through this quantum transition, the amount of hash rate that goes into securing the Bitcoin network is going to grow up significantly. It's going to grow up exponentially, which just makes the network more secure, which just drives more value into the asset class itself and into the digital economy. So are there some changes that are going to be need to be made through time? Yeah, absolutely. But should we be changing things right now that could add different use cases? And I understand the argument. We don't want UTXO bloat. So if you use Taproot and you use SegWit, you're actually bloating the UTXO set. So you're creating more data that needs to be stored on a node, which increases the technical requirements on a node, which ultimately leads to centralization versus decentralization, because now it's more expensive and more technical to run a node than it would be if it was just like a Raspberry Pi that could run a node and you don't need massive data storage. So UTXO bloat is a real thing. So if we can mitigate UTXO bloat by allowing data storage through op return data instead of through SegWit and Taproot, then, you know, maybe that should be considered. But should there be a data limit? Absolutely. I don't think it should be like infinite amount of data. Like that doesn't make sense. When do you go from, it's like that song, 0 to 100 real quick, right? Like that's a bad idea. Like let's just raise the limit a little bit and see what comes with it. If you're going to do that, like my core position is make no changes. So my personal position, my node is signaling make no changes. I don't want any, this is a monetary network. And we need to fix the money to fix the world. And then after we have the global adoption, after we have the transfer of wealth, now let's try to have a little bit more fun with it. But until then, don't touch Bitcoin. Only do what is necessary to Bitcoin through quantum and other things that pop up over time. But it should be our kids and our grandkids who are talking about this argument, not us.
I like that viewpoint. But CJ, last time I had you on the show, we talked about all of the Greek traditions, right? So we went into that. You've got the longest last name in the Bitcoin space, potentially. It looks like you fell asleep on the keyboard a little bit. But I mean, I get it. I'm half Greek. I mean, I don't got the Greek last name. But hey, I love my feta cheese as well. But I heard something about you, that you're an outstanding golfer. So who do you want to call out in the Bitcoin space about that you could beat in golf? Or you could even call out Donald Trump at this point, because you know, he's, I guess, technically in the Bitcoin space. So who do you want to call out on the golf course, man?
Oh, well, that is a really great question. I love that. But you know what? I would be honored to meet with Donald Trump and show him my beautiful, I wish I was wearing it right now, but I have a beautiful Max and Stacey Invitational watch. Now, it is a second place watch because the people over at Bitcoin Sports Network, who are amazing people, definitely check out their events and participate in their events. It's so worth it. They do a great job, and they're true Bitcoiners, and they deserve our support. But I will never let them go for this, because I wanted that orange jacket. I wanted the orange jacket. Okay. I was out in Vegas at the Orange Tie Affair and I was like, I just wanted that orange jacket was mine. But they put two professional golfers together. The Banco Azteco golfers are professionally sponsored golfers on the Mexican PGA Tour. And they were the ones who beat me and my partner, Peche. So I'm very much looking forward to this next year's event. Me and Peche are coming back with a vengeance and we are coming for first place. But there's so many parallels between golf and you. And as you know, I used to be a hockey player. So I grew up playing hockey. And then after I got done at college, I started playing Bush League. My kids started coming watch me play. And then, you know, these guys are playing like it's the Stanley Cup playoffs, right? Like it's our boys in Florida. It's like Panthers, Stanley. I'm like, guys, this is beer league. We are actually paying to play. We are not getting paid to play. We pay to play. So can you calm down? But they didn't want to calm down. So I actually stopped playing hockey and transitioned to my summer sport, which was golf. And I'm just so passionate about golf because it requires patience. It requires consistency. And there's a lot of variables, wrist angles, swing planes, even your club technology and ball technology. So bringing all those different variables together and then ultimately disciplining yourself through each swing to maintain that consistency is a lot like Bitcoin. Disciplining yourself to not spend and to save and disciplining yourself to push back that redemption of reward and to have a long-term mindset. Think about the full 72 hole competition, not just the first 18 holes. If you have a bad hole, you let it go, right? If you, all of these things parallel to Bitcoin so well. And I would love, I who else can I call out, right? I already came in second place. Every Bitcoiner that's a golfer was down in El Salvador. And I came in second place. Only the professional golfers outed us. They don't count. I'm sure those orange jackets are just sitting in their closet. They're never going to wear them. So I don't have anybody to call out in the Bitcoin space except for Donald Trump. So let's go, Donald. I'm in Southwest Florida. I'd love to come on the course, talk to you about Bitcoin, talk to you about your amazing World Liberty Finance platform, talk to you about decentralized finance and how Bitcoin is the reserve asset of the internet economy. Nothing else can compete with Bitcoin. Anything that exists in the digital world should complement Bitcoin. And I think with his mindset and the people that surround him with his sons, we would have a fun time playing. But number two, I think we would really learn from each other and learn how the United States of America could integrate Bitcoin, not just through a strategic Bitcoin reserve, but through the Bitcoin Recapitalization Fund, integrate Bitcoin into our monetary, fiscal, and economic policies. Because if we want to maintain the lead in global finance, we must take the lead. And Donald knows that better than anybody. You have to make hard decisions in business and in life. And right now, the United States is faced with a very hard decision. Since we're already the currency that is the reserve currency of the world, it's hard to want to change things up because everything's been going so well. But the truth is that we're stuck in a fiscal dominant situation. And if we don't adopt Bitcoin, if we don't take the dollars that we're printing and invest some of those dollars into Bitcoin, there is no mathematical way for the asset side of our balance sheet, for the growth of the asset side of our balance sheet to outpace the growth of the liability side of our balance sheet. You cannot take that money and invest it in real estate. You're just going to have even more of an affordability problem. We for sure as heck don't want to sell Alaska back to the Russians. So we can't just give up our land and materials. If we want to unlock some of those resources, it's going to take a decade just to get some cash flow going. The only real option we have to fight back against fiscal dominance is to take some of the dollars that we're borrowing and to buy Bitcoin so that the growth of the asset side of our balance sheet will start to outpace the growth of our liabilities, the $37 trillion in liabilities, the $2 trillion deficits year over year, the $220 trillion of unfunded liabilities. How do we pay for these things realistically? By adopting Bitcoin, and not just by issuing debt to buy Bitcoin, but also collecting tariffs in Bitcoin. Donald Trump is the tariff king, but what if you paid tariffs in Bitcoin and you got a discount? And then the United States could add that Bitcoin to its reserve by offering discounted tariffs through Bitcoin. You're still getting dollars. You're still getting demand on dollars, but you're also collecting Bitcoin. We need to integrate Bitcoin into our fiscal, monetary, and economic policies, or we will lose the lead in the internet economy. And I don't want to be in a world where the United States is not a financial leader. Our whole economy is financialized. And if we give up that lead, we're giving the future of our children and grandchildren over to a different governance mechanism, over to what could be a regime to make decisions for us. We need to take power, maintain power in a peaceful way. And the best way to do that is by adopting Bitcoin and integrating it fully.
Okay, so you've discovered Bitcoin and are on the path to financial self-sovereignty. But simply holding Bitcoin is not enough. You need to make sure that it's stored properly and you are in 100% control over all your assets. So sharing your keys with third parties and taking on that counterparty risk is not the answer. The answer is pure and simple. It's uncompromising self-custody, and there's no better way to do it than the Bitcoin way. They've got over 25 years of cybersecurity experience, and their team of experts can help you properly self-custody your Bitcoin, secure your digital life, configure your privacy phones, and even establish a Plan B residency if you're looking to do so. So I'm gonna help you guys out here and give you a free consultation if you take the first step and visit thebitcoinway.com/greencandle, and you can check out the boys at The Bitcoin Way and see how they can help you become self-sovereign.
In true Bitcoiner fashion, you turned a question about it to golf, about golf into Bitcoin. So I love it, CJ. But I mean, I definitely see your point with all of this, right? I mean, but it leads me to believe, do you actually think that we can pay off this $37 trillion debt? Or do you think the dollar eventually is going to default and then, you know, the system's going to crash and burn? Like, is there a way out of it, even if we use Bitcoin?
Yeah, the dollar is already soft defaulting. That's the problem. We're in a soft there's a soft default and there's a hard default. A hard default is an admission that, man, we're never going to be able to pay this back. So we're only going to be able to pay you 30, 40 cents on the dollar, and everybody takes a haircut. That's a hard default. I don't think we get to the hard default because it would be catastrophic to our system. Pension plans, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, they're all supported by our cash equivalents. So to put a haircut of 50, 60, 70% on those cash equivalents would crush those programs and crash the quality of life and standard of living for everyday Americans. So the option of hard default is basically not on the table. So what are we forced to do? We're forced to continuously soft default. And what is a soft default? A soft default is a deficit budget. A soft DEFA is a budget where the taxes you collect from your economy are not enough to cover your budget. Therefore, you must print and issue more cash equivalents. You must dilute cash equivalents. You must create inflation to service your debt and to spend what you've allocated to spend in your budget. So we are currently soft defaulting, and that is a big issue. But if you put Bitcoin on your balance sheet, that soft default actually drives value into the asset side of your balance sheet. So right now, I do think there is potential. There is the ability to adopt Bitcoin and fully integrate Bitcoin and eliminate the burden of debt for the United States of America. We have that opportunity if we act now. If we wait too long, we're not going to have that opportunity, because the further and further we get up the S-curve of adoption and the higher the price of Bitcoin, the slower the growth of the asset side of our balance sheet, right? It's like for us, who've been in the industry a long time, start buying Bitcoin at $150, then, you know, every little price movement affects your portfolio significantly. But if you bought Bitcoin at $100,000, you know, these moves from 108 to 103 to 105, they won't really do too much to your portfolio. So we need to establish an extremely low cost basis. And the best way to do that is by, number one, issuing debt to accumulate tokens, and to accumulate the Bitcoin through tariffs and through ways that it costs you nothing. You're receiving it in return through economic deals and through the function of the economy, so that you can lower your cost basis, get that cost basis as close to zero as you can in order to pay off the debt. And I do have to say this too. You mentioned the Bitcoin way. I talked with Michael, and he makes a very solid argument that government should not have Bitcoin. And why do we want to empower governments to hold Bitcoin? But I think when you look at the entire world and you make that statement, it's probably true. But when you look at the United States, I'm a patriot. I'm a constitutionalist. There's a reason that everybody in the world is trying to come here. And it's because you have the most amount of freedom here. That doesn't mean the Constitution is perfect. That doesn't mean we don't need a digital constitution. That doesn't mean we don't need to continue to innovate as we move into the future, but it does mean that this is where you can come to be free relative to anywhere else in the world. It does mean that we are the light of the world. And I think that what you see in this country right now, when you talk to the everyday people on the streets, very few of these people are the people that you see out in LA wearing masks and rioting and holding upside down United States flags and burning flags. The vast majority of people in this country are very thankful for the veterans who gave their lifetime and energy to protect our freedoms. The vast majority of this country believe in freedom and individual liberty. The problem is the cantillionaires have abused this freedom and have started to force their methodology on everybody else. Your kid is a boy, but it could be a girl. What? What are you talking about? Wear a mask. You're not allowed to go to work. Take a vaccine. What is this? This is not freedom. So we've moved into this time frame where the root of all evil comes from those who love money. And that's what I love Bitcoin about. Bitcoiners don't love money. We love humanity. Money is just a means to interact with humanity. And as this mindset changes, we can adopt Bitcoin. And Bitcoin, it doesn't just change you. Bitcoin doesn't just change business. It also can change the sovereign entity. It also can change the rule of law to make sense and to embrace freedom. And for that reason, for that hope, I think it makes sense to integrate Bitcoin and give us a chance at a true orange peace revolution led by the country who started it all with their fight for independence and freedom. And to me, it's worth that peaceful fight. It's worth that peaceful revolution for our kids and grandkids to have a chance to embrace true freedom and to not have value extracted from them, but to have value delivered to them through the system itself. And I think it's worth that time and energy to try to figure it out rather than to just say governments are hopeless and we're watching revival here in the United States right now. We're watching people stand up and say, that's it. You're not going to tell me how to live my life. You do have the right to make sure that other people aren't harming other people. You do have the right to create some laws that make sure there's some sort of scenario where we don't get into this Mad Max scenario where I just saw a video. My wife showed me this video because we were in Vegas for the Bitcoin conference. A week later, there was this guy live streaming on the Vegas Strip. Apparently him and some other guy were beefing on YouTube. The guy came up and murdered him on the live stream. Came up, pulled out a gun, shot him. The wife started crying and said, what are you doing? No, no, no. He shot like 6 or 7 more bullets, murdered him cold in the street. Well, is a regular citizen going to step up and arrest that guy? No. There should be police. There should be firemen. There should be structure. There should be rule of law that protects life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And the government is the perfect entity to do that. Now, have they overstepped? Yes. But I think if we integrate Bitcoin, we can take back some of that overstepping, peel things back a little bit, and get into that sweet spot where the government plays a role of protecting life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and the people play their role in embracing sovereignty and freedom and taking advantage of being your own bank and not letting other people make decisions for you. Is that a dream? Maybe it is, but I'm going to work towards that dream, not just for myself, but for my children, because I think it's worth working towards.
Amen. And I think, you know, at a certain point, if Bitcoin wasn't able to survive governments getting involved, then Bitcoin wasn't destined to work regardless. So, you know, as they say, Bitcoin is for everyone. That includes the enemies, right? So, but CJ, you've been outstanding as always. I can't wait to link up with you later today, actually, here in Tampa, Florida for Bitcoin Day. But outside of that, what else you got going on, man? Tell people where they can find out more about you and People's Reserve.
Absolutely. Yeah. So of course, I think the best thing to do right now is just go to peoplesreserve.com, sign up for our newsletter. We're going to make some really exciting announcements. As a matter of fact, this year, July 4th, Independence Day, we're calling it We the People Day. You can see in the background there, we have We the People under Serve, right? So it's People's Reserve, but we want to serve We the People. So on We the People Day this year, it's going to be a big day. And as I talked about today with our PRN loyalty token, July 4th will be that token sale day. So get ready for July 4th. If you're interested in establishing your loyalty level and getting the lowest cost of capital that you can to participate in that token sale. And by the end of the month, we will start writing contracts and we will start empowering you to unlock the purchasing power of your Bitcoin without giving up ownership. So we're really excited to roll in, I think, for the first time in a long time, an Independence Day that represents financial freedom and financial sovereignty powered by Bitcoin and then complemented by the PRN loyalty token. And Brennan, thank you so much for having me. I look forward to coming back after we go live. And of course, I'll see you tonight in Tampa.
Yeah, man. CJ's the best. Everybody go check him out. I'm going to put all of that in the show notes. And don't forget to smoke the like Cheech and Chong. Hit that subscribe button. Tell a friend to tell a friend. And I will catch you guys all at the next one.
Thank you for tuning in to the latest episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you really enjoyed this one, I've got another one cooking up for you. You can click that right here and you can go to the next episode, which is an absolute banger, where you know I'm bringing you only the latest and greatest guests. Or if you're looking for more macro-related content, you could check out my other channel, Macro Insights Pod. I got it linked for you right here. So where I'm bringing you more about stocks, real estate, traditional finance stuff. So go ahead and check that out. And if you enjoyed this podcast, go ahead and hit that like, hit that subscribe button, and tell a friend to tell a friend. All right, enough from me. I'll see you at the next one.